Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily dose of the top stories from Hacker News. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Mike. Today is Monday, May 4th, but we are covering the top stories from yesterday, May 3rd, 2026. This is episode 385, and we have a really great lineup for you today.
We absolutely do, Mike. We'll be talking about Mercedes-Benz finally bringing back physical buttons to their cars, a fascinating deep dive into how the fintech startup Mercury manages 2 million lines of Haskell, and some surprising news in the AI space, where a Chinese open weights model just beat the big Western labs in a coding challenge.
We also have a story about OpenAI's O1 model outperforming human doctors in ER triage, and we'll wrap things up with a look at a mysterious new Banksy statue that popped up in London.
Let's kick things off with cars. If you've driven a new car in the last 5 years, you have probably been frustrated by the touchscreens. Well, Mercedes-Benz has officially committed to bringing back physical buttons in their upcoming interiors.
Yeah, the article from Drive points out that Mercedes is joining a growing list of manufacturers who are basically admitting that burying frequently used controls in touchscreen menus was a massive mistake. They are keeping the giant screens, like their 39-inch hyperscreen, but they are adding physical buttons and switches back to the steering wheel and the center console.
The sales boss at Mercedes explicitly said that customers told them 2 years ago that the touch-only approach just doesn't work for them. But the Hacker News comments had a slightly different and very interesting take on why this might really be happening.
Right. A user named Nokia pointed out that starting next year, China is actually requiring physical buttons for basic car functions. Since China is one of the biggest markets for Mercedes, the theory is that this is less about listening to Western customer feedback and more about complying with Chinese regulations.
Which makes perfect sense. It's always interesting when a regulatory change in one massive market forces a global design correction. There was also a great discussion in the thread about German user experience design in general. A commenter named The Inflator went on a bit of a rant, saying that aside from Dieter Rams at Braun, German IT and UX development is usually a disaster driven by committee.
They contrasted the hubris of car companies trying to build their own operating systems from scratch with the seamless UX of something like the older Porsche 997, which had a fantastic blend of knobs and a touchscreen. It really highlights that the pendulum swung way too far toward screens, and now we are finally settling back into a hybrid approach where tactile feedback is valued again.
Speaking of engineering choices that go against the grain, our next story is a blog post from Ian Duncan about production engineering at Mercury. The title alone grabbed a lot of attention. A couple million lines of Haskell.
2 million lines of Haskell in a fintech company that processes hundreds of billions of dollars. That is wild, Sarah. The conventional wisdom is that a massive Haskell codebase maintained by generalists who learn the language on the job should be a complete disaster. But Ian argues that it is actually their secret weapon.
Exactly. He talks about how purity in Haskell isn't just an academic property, but a rigid boundary. When you have a company growing fast, institutional knowledge usually walks out the door when an engineer leaves. But at Mercury, they use Haskell's type system to encode that operational knowledge directly into the APIs.
I loved his point about adaptive capacity. Reliability isn't just about preventing failures. It is about making the safe path the easy one for new hires. The compiler acts as a ruthless but helpful reviewer. If someone misuses an interface, the compiler stops them before it ever reaches production.
The comments really dug into this. A user named Bree3 pointed out that this pattern of encoding state into types, like turning a generic user into a logged-in user and then into an access-controlled logged-in user, is massively underutilized in the industry. They mention you can do this in Rust and TypeScript too, but Haskell is uniquely powerful for it.
There was a bit of a debate about whether you can do this in any language. Someone argued you could just use wrapper classes in dynamically typed languages, but others quickly pointed out the performance costs. In statically typed languages like Rust or Haskell, you get these zero-cost abstractions where the wrappers evaporate at compile time. It just goes to show that choosing a niche language like Haskell for a startup is a huge risk, but if you lean into its strengths, it can scale incredibly well.
Transitioning from human coding to AI coding, our third story is a real shakeup in the AI leaderboard. An open weights Chinese model named Kimi K2.6 just beat Claude Opus 4.7, GPT 5.5, and Gemini in a live programming challenge.
This was a fascinating read. The author of the post runs an ongoing AI coding contest, and this specific challenge was a word gem puzzle. It's a sliding tile letter game where the bots have to form words on grids up to 30 by 30 in size. Kimi won outright with a highly aggressive, greedy algorithm approach, constantly sliding tiles to unlock new words.
What is crazy is that the big Western frontier models all fell short. GPT 5.5 came in third, Claude was fifth, and Gemini was down in sixth place. Some models, like Xiaomi's MiMo, which came in second, just scanned the board for existing words and didn't even bother sliding tiles. And then there was Muse, which hilariously claimed every single word on the board, including three-letter words that actually cost 2 points, ending up with a score of negative 15,000.
That is hilarious, but the broader implication here is huge. A year ago, everyone assumed the major US labs had an insurmountable lead. Now we have an open weights model from a 2023 startup topping the charts in a complex reasoning and coding task.
The Hacker News community was buzzing about the economic impact of this. A user named P. Jerem pointed out that the real news is being able to run models equivalent to Cloud Opus locally or on cheap cloud providers like Llama for a fraction of the cost. They argued this breaks the monopoly pricing of the big tech companies.
There was a lively debate about whether this is good or bad for the US economy, but as Zalsbot234 noted, these Chinese labs are introducing real technical innovations and publishing their research, which is accelerating global progress while some proprietary labs seem to be stagnating. It really feels like the AI landscape is shifting from a unipolar world to a highly competitive, fragmented one.
That perfectly sets up our next story, which looks at how these powerful AI models are being applied in the real world. A groundbreaking Harvard study found that OpenAI's O1 reasoning model outperformed human doctors in emergency room triage diagnoses.
The numbers are pretty staggering. The AI and human doctors were given the same electronic health records for 76 ER patients. The AI got the exact or very close diagnosis 67% of the time, while the human doctors were only right 50 to 55% of the time.
And when the AI was given more detailed information, its accuracy jumped to 82%. It also beat humans significantly in creating long-term treatment plans. But the researchers were quick to point out that this doesn't mean AI is replacing doctors tomorrow. The AI only saw text data. It couldn't see the patient's visual distress or hear their tone of voice.
Right. They are calling it a triadic care model for the future. The doctor, the patient, and the AI system working together. But the HN comments brought a healthy dose of skepticism to the methodology. A user named GPM warned that it is very easy to mess up these benchmarks, citing a previous study where an AI beat radiologists without even having access to the actual x-rays.
That's a great point, Mike. You have to wonder if there is some data leakage or if the prompt format naturally favors the AI. But putting the benchmark debate aside, there was a really deep philosophical discussion about what humans will actually be better at in the long run. Pixel Popping asked, if medicine is just knowledge and pattern recognition, won't AI inevitably surpass us?
The responses to that were very grounded in human reality. Shog9 pointed out that one of the biggest challenges in healthcare, especially in the US, is fighting insurance companies to get treatments approved. You need a sympathetic human doctor to advocate for you. Replacing that advocate with a machine whose function also needs insurance approval sounds like a dystopian nightmare.
Absolutely. And as Teleforce mentioned, you can't ignore the liability and ethical aspects, like the Hippocratic Oath. AI is going to be an incredible screening tool, maybe hitting near 100% sensitivity to catch things humans miss. But you will always need a human in the loop to handle the false positives and provide actual care.
Let's step away from the screens and algorithms for our final story. A new statue attributed to the elusive street artist Banksy has appeared in central London. It depicts a man in a suit, completely blinded by a flag he is carrying, walking right off the edge of a pedestal.
It was installed in the middle of the night in Waterloo Place, surrounded by historic monuments of kings and military figures. Banksy seemingly confirmed it was his work through an Instagram video. It's a striking piece, but what I loved most was how the Hacker News crowd analyzed it.
Yeah, art critique on Hacker News is always a fun time. A commenter named GPM noted the imagery of being wrapped in the flag and boldly marching into the void. But HNThrowaway99 made a brilliant observation. They called the statue the ultimate Rorschach test.
I loved that comment. Because the flag is completely unadorned and blank, and the man is anonymous, anyone looking at it can project their own political opponents onto the statue. If you lean left, you might see a blind nationalist marching the country off a cliff. If you lean right, you might see someone blinded by social justice ideologies doing the exact same thing.
Exactly. Some people in the thread complained that the message was too obvious and lacked subtlety, but the fact that it is so ambiguous about who exactly is being blinded makes it much more clever. It's a mirror reflecting the viewer's own biases. And of course, there was a very British tangent in the comments about the proliferation of regional flags in the UK, with users debating the flags of Cornwall, Devon, and Somerset.
Only on Hacker News do you go from analyzing the socio-political meaning of a Banksy statue to a deep dive into the history of county flags in Southwest England. It is the perfect palate cleanser after talking about AI benchmarks and functional programming architectures.
It really is. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. Five very different stories, but all touching on how we interact with the systems around us, whether that is a car dashboard, a code base, a medical diagnosis, or a piece of public art.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend or colleague. We will be back tomorrow with another breakdown of the top stories from Hacker News. Until then, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Mike. Have a great day and happy hacking.